Gundam Maniacs, welcome to the Gundam Explained Show. If you're watching right now, which could in the future could still be right now, couldn't it? Because this is a live show, but it depends on when you're watching it.
Right. If you're watching now, whether it's then or now, it could be also then that we're talking to you now.
Right. And if you're listening right now, it could be live, but it also could be the podcast version, which is on Spotify, Apple Music, and all that. I think Google closed down their podcast thing, but
RIP.
They're using YouTube Music. So, welcome to the Gundam Explained show. Not only is it me, but it's also Steven, which is a human. So happy you're here.
Yeah. Hey, I'm happy to not be an AI. It is March 7th.
No, but really cool episode yesterday on Steven's channel. If you haven't checked it out, he actually goes into details of an event coming up. I'm going to share that here in a second, but just some minor details. But if you want the full thing of what Steven and I are going to be up to with some other Gundam influencers, make sure you check out his show.
Hey, cheers. Thank you.
Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun, especially some of the things you were talking about. And then you even had a supporter stream.
We had a supporter stream on Tuesday. I'm going to bring back supporter streams. So I did put out, you know, kind of a feeler on Patreon, like, hey, what would be ideal days and times for supporter streams? But until then, I'm just going to do surprise streams. Like, shoot, I might even be streaming tomorrow.
Dude, that's awesome. Stay tuned
for that.
That is awesome. So I guess, pay attention to that. Your Discord, you'll probably notify or however.
Yeah, I'll let supporters know. And, you know, it's usually just going to be like sort of behind the scenes content with the stuff that I'm doing in between these shows and like actually working on some of the little toys and gadgets that I like to show off in the fully edited videos. But
I know it's crazy when we do your show and all of the things that you talk about you're working on. So this is like another way for those that are interested to get more insight into that.
Yeah. Plus you get free files, right? Like, you know, a free STL every month for 3D printing if you're into that. So
that is definitely cool. You know, one thing here, it's really cool. It is raining like crazy here in Texas. I'm just so glad I can look out my window and see that channel I made. It goes right under the grass. So all the water is just going out.
Right. That's how you know you've become a dad, when you hit the Home Depot and you dig out like a little trench that you can. Oh, man. When I installed the French drains because I was getting flooding in my garage, it was like
such a satisfying feeling.
Yeah. It's
it's awesome. It's like I was connecting that Gunpla building with dad. Another thing in the chat, I actually put up a poll. So, Steven, thanks for that inspiration. And I made it really simple just because it's something I think about when I like stand in the mirror brushing my teeth. I'm like, what are people more excited for? Hathaway 2 or Rec Room for Vengeance? So I threw that in there. We'll check it by the end of the.
Yeah, I love the question of the day format. I'm doing it on my streams. I'm glad that we're doing it here. And I even voted on this one because awesome. I was like, I have an opinion. I have, you guys know, I have lots of opinions and I'm going to share them.
Whether we'll see you how like wrong it is, but we'll see. Yeah. I'm just joking now. Speaking of chat, we got a lot of awesome people in here. We got Dan Vince, Xionic Shadow, Gundam Wing, Hyena Mage, Barry BB, Gemkill X, Aoshi-san, who is part of that Springtide event I talked about, and I'll show some more details here.
Hey, cheers, shortly. Bud.
Let's see. And Xionic is in that, too. He was just notifying that. And then Johnny Tacoma, good to see you. Let's see. King Dylan, Joshua Chapman. And what is it with all the F90 stuff coming, stuff Gundam is coming out with? Sorry, I butchered that sentence. Well, yeah, it is interesting. Real quick, I think we could talk about that, where it's like, I made that joke on my short. Well,
which
we talked
so
about
it. Like, it's so perfect.
It was like, why are they pushing F90? But I think what it is like, I mean, it looks cool, but I'm the type of Gundam fan that I really get into the lore and story of something I'm able to see in action, right? So I don't know too much of F90. It looks cool. But it was like this... It's kind of like a platform, if you will, that Bandai is able to continually iterate on, where they come out with new versions, new armor packs and something. And, there's one hand where it's like that. It looks cool. But because there's not an anime associated with it, it just falls off my radar. What about you? Like,
yeah, I think that it's definitely more of the mecha driven. And you and I talked about this yesterday where, you know, Gundam fans kind of fall in one of three camps, right? They either are Gunpla fans, they are Gundam fans, or they are a mixture of both.
Yeah.
And so shout out to G1 Scorponok, who's one of the users over on my Discord. He is a huge F90 guy. He has the Master Grade F90. He has all of the packs. He tweets out every time he gets one of the new packs. Like, he's all about the F90. And I think that you hit the nail on the head. It's like, you and I kind of have a character driven attachment to the mecha that we consume, right? So like, I love the Zeta Gundam because I love Camille as a character. But I think that with F90 fans, and correct me if I'm wrong, chat, I'm always willing to eat crow on these things, but it does seem to me that F90 fans are like all about the mech itself of the F90 and the sort of modular packs that it comes with.
Yeah, and I gotta admit, it's making me think I should get into it more because it has a really neat classic Gundam look for being more of a future UC thing, you know, because like even that F91 takes it a bit further, looking a little more abstract compared to the grounded Gundams. But that F90 has a cool look. I might look into it because, you know, those Mobile Suit Ensemble figures I would collect.
Oh, yeah.
They actually have the same thing where you can get the F90 and it has all these packs for it. That's pretty neat. So that's a good question. Yeah,
my whole thing with F90 and F91 for that matter is I always go back to that meme from C-Lab 2021. Did you ever watch that cartoon on Adult Swim?
I think I might have saw a couple episodes back in the day. Was it like a humorous, like underwater cartoon?
Yeah, so there was a cartoon back in like, I guess, the 70s, 80s called C-Lab 2020. And C-Lab 2021 was, they were just overdubbing the dialogue from the cartoon.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, I love that kind of stuff. You know, it's like the DBZ abridged type stuff.
Okay.
And so there was one episode where they were discussing, hey, would you replace your body? Would you put your brain in a robot body? And it's like, but you can have the strength of 10 gorillas, but you can only be 5 feet tall. And it's like, why so short? And so one of the characters just keeps saying, like, why so short?
Dude, I need
that's
to watch.
How I feel about F90 is I'm like, I love the Gundam designs. I love Seabook. I love F91. Yeah. Like, everything about F90, F91 is awesome.
This sounds like a retcon, by the way.
Short.
It sounds like you're retconning your own origin story.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. But I think that might be at the heart of it. Is I'm like, I hate late UC because everything's so small. Why is it small?
But you know what? I think there's kind of an underlying thing where it is a little disjointed because F91 doesn't really directly relate to that greater sort of Char Amuro legacy. So, you know.
Yeah.
But that's a great question. Another good question. Do we know if we are getting another anime, Iron-Blooded, Orphans 2, etc.? There are many possibilities they could redo the origin UC story. So, one thing for sure is I know we're getting that Requiem for Vengeance. Check that question I put up in in the chat. Like, Hathaway 2 is the movie that might be coming out this year. I don't know, maybe next year. And then Requiem for Vengeance is the show. But if we are talking proper anime, that is a good question. Like, you know, like Witch for Mercury basically was the last kind of that proper series thing.
Yeah.
I don't think we would get one this year just because it seems a little stacked already.
Yeah. And you know, it's so funny. We were talking about this yesterday. Is it's like all of the sort of Johnny Come Lately announcements when it comes to Gundam media, where it's like, you know, we get an announcement about Seed Freedom coming out in the US on March 31st, and we get the announcement on March 5th. Like,
oh yeah.
So, you know, we might get Hathaway this year, and it might be announced. Like,
yeah,
Hathaway might air in August, and we're gonna get the announcement July 29th. You know,
I wonder how the relationship is with Netflix, you know, because there's other Gundam things going on where they're seeing Hathaway 2 as an event sort of thing, like the first one. And I don't know if it's because I really only use Netflix for very little, but a lot of times Netflix is like, here, watch Hathaway. And it's like, I have 8 times. And
yeah,
I mean, I don't know if they're pushing it because my algorithm is narrow, or in general, they kind of push that to action adventure watchers.
I'm glad you brought that up because, like, so for me, I only use Netflix. Basically, my wife and I watch Love is Blind. But
do you recommend that? Is that a good couples show?
Yeah. You know, if you've got a special lady at home, watch Love is Blind with her. It is quality bonding time, especially if you've got your laptop and you're doing some editing on your YouTube video.
Well, there you go. Or have a ROG Ally in my hand in place.
There you go. Or a Nintendo Switch, whatever the case may be. The funny thing is I came across it, and I shared this with you privately, Adam, is Netflix is hiring actively on LinkedIn. Yeah. They are hiring game developers, not just like game porters or something. Like, they want people that are going to be actually creating video games. And so this is one of those things where it's like, we can only speculate because we don't know the inner workings of what's going on at Netflix. But it's very interesting to me that, like you said, you mentioned that they're pushing Hathaway pretty hard on Netflix. And we know that Netflix is hiring video game devs, as if Netflix is going to start going into that idea of streaming video games. They're going to start going the Google Stadia route, perhaps?
Yeah.
Or Amazon Luna, is that the...
Yeah, that's the other one. And it's very interesting because, you know, Stadia didn't work only because Google said it's so expensive to make games. And that's the issue, you know, Sony and Microsoft are in. Nintendo gets away with it because they've been able to kind of carve their own unique path, you know, and really have strong tenets of game design that they stick with.
Exactly.
Netflix is interesting because, like, if you use like their game stuff, like on a mobile phone, it will just have you download a Netflix version of that app.
Right.
But I wonder how much is just the streaming, because like even on TV, I haven't tried it yet, but on my TV on Netflix, there's a section for games and I look at them like, oh, cool. And I just keep going.
Yeah.
But I wonder how that works. Like,
I think that is definitely something that they're looking to expand. And it's promising to me that they are expanding it in such a way that they are hiring dedicated devs. They're not just looking to port existing games into Netflix. They're like, we want to make platform specific games for Netflix. I mean, it's a weird climate out there for Gundam and for gaming. And so these things are...
Well, you know, it's interesting because if Netflix plays it smart, which I'm just a guy on the internet, who knows if my ideas are good or not, but they could create Netflix as a gaming platform, sort of like how Fortnite and Roblox is working. People can go on Netflix to watch and then play with their friends. Like, that's how they really should be approaching it, where then people can...
What was the old video game version of Netflix? Like, back when Netflix was sending out discs?
Gamefly.
That was it.
Dude, I used that. Even my old videos on Blue Gamer are me, like, here's what I got from Gamefly today. And then I'll play it and then do a little review. I loved it. I would do I think three games at a time, or maybe just two. And I would cycle them in. And I was saving a lot of money that way. And I would even buy the, if like, man, I really like this game, I'm just going to buy it. And then, you know, they'll send me the...
It's such a different situation now because, and we talk about this on Discord a lot, is like my family used to rent consoles. Like, we would go to Blockbuster and like rent an N64 or rent a Sega Saturn. And it was like, it was the coolest thing ever because you get to like sample all these different types of video games and platforms without having to commit to the
whole console or platform. Just like seeing Nintendo release demos. They just released a demo for that Princess Peach game. Like, even that, there's that Atlas game, the Dragon's Crown developer, Vanillaware. It just came out, Unicorn Overlord. And it's an interesting RTS strategy game that just came out. Well, it's about to come out, or it just came out. But anyway, on Switch, there's a demo, and it's like 8 hours. And whatever you do, you can carry over into the full game. It's a little too JRPG for me, but it's... worth it because it's a demo. But anyway, I wanted to touch on, because this is going to be part of the next subject in, you know, I released a video earlier this week about a Gundam game on Virtual Boy. And I know you guys probably noticed or not, the audio was messed up. When I was done recording, I realized that, I guess it happens, where the mic was just picking up in a staticky way. So then I had to use like the Adobe audio repair and then tweak it. And it was good enough, but So in that video, I was showing how if you use a Virtual Boy emulator on the 3DS, and that you can actually get that 3D effect. They've made it to where you can play it like the Virtual Boy. And so It's interesting. That's so cool. And the reason you remind me to talk on this subject now is because the only time I played a Virtual Boy happened to do with Blockbuster, having them available for rent. I want to say maybe we didn't rent it, but we were able to try it there. I forget because I do have memories with it, but
core memories.
Well, yeah. And then anyway, so what was happening when I was looking at the news that, hey, there's this Virtual Boy emulator on 3DS. And because I thought that was neat. I was like, oh, I got the 3DS recently. I want to do that 3D. And they're like, every game is like available in a package. And one of the games was Gundam. And I'm just like, what? This is speaking my language. I just got a 3DS for the 3DS Gundam game. And now yeah, I find man. Out there's this Virtual Boy. And so check out the video if you want. But to kind of explain it, it's very interesting. It's pretty much an SD Gundam G Generation game. But like super scaled down to where you're looking at the grid instead of like the 2D flat look. They have it kind of like line 3D lines or whatever, so you can see the grid, and then like it's still the pixel graphics, but there's not many on screen at once, and they're like the awesome suits, like you have an RX-78-2 with a GP-01 or something like that, and it's the same thing where you select the character, move, once you're in range you can choose attack, and then it goes into something that I would like to describe it as the Mario Tennis on Virtual Boy, because it's that depth where you have someone like you see yourself near the screen, someone behind, and you actually use the triggers to move while shooting. It's very cumbersome. Cool, it's hard to land the hits. I think while that's a neat part of the game, it actually prolongs the game to be unnecessarily long. I might spend 5 minutes just sitting there, just trading shots with something until it dies. And but other than that, it's actually impressive.
Well, and a lot of those games, you know, it's like more about promoting the gimmick than it is about the gameplay itself. And we've talked about this like with the Nintendo Wii, where it was like there was like a whole collection of games that's like, you know, let's try and use the nunchuck somehow and incorporate that into the gameplay. And I think it's best when those things tend to be more organic and it's like the game informs the mechanic as opposed to the mechanic being forced into the game. So
yeah, it's almost like, hey, we just want to showcase a gimmick. There's no real practical gaming application, but here's the gimmick. And
you're right.
Generally, Nintendo's always been good about incorporating the gameplay in the gimmick. And you can look back and see where it didn't work, like Virtual Boy. I think Wii U should have worked. It was ahead of its time because it was pretty much having that portable, dockable handheld in your house, which I remember
Dreamcast.
But when the Wii U was the main Nintendo system out at the time, I was in I had younger kids then. I was using it all the time. I remember just during the day or at dinner or just hanging out. I remember the kitchen table, the kids are eating, and I'm sitting there playing Bayonetta 2 on the Wii U. It was good times. But yeah, anyway, check that out. I saw a question here. Are you going to see the Gundam Seed movie? Well, as soon as they release it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that we talked about this a little bit yesterday, but I think that both of us are definitely going to watch it, but it's going to be on streaming or
how and when.
How and when is the question. I'm definitely not going to New York to the premiere because, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was, check out Steven's show again for that. We went into detail, but basically, if I had enough advance notice and could plan like a trip with the family around it, I might have done it, but
exactly
too soon. Yeah. Okay. Something else I want to do real quick before I move on to the next topic. I'm using Zionic Shadows Twitter, but he's just posting that, you know, starting March 13th next week, we're doing this Gundam Springtide celebrations with a bunch of Gundam influencers, and actually it kicks off on Steven's channel, on his show, which is pretty awesome, March 13th. And Vampy Bitme is going to be on there, too. She's a big Gundam influencer cosplayer, so it'd be cool to get her perspective as we just talk history of Gundam, pretty much. And then actually, on Gundam Explained the following day, we'll talk gaming. And then, for the next couple days after that, it are going to be some live-streamed GBO2 tournaments between creators and players out there. If you're interested, follow the Xionic Shadow. Follow Aoshi-san on Twitter. He's even in the chat, or was earlier. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
And Red Wolf Vion's going to be shoutcasting the GBO2 events on Friday and Saturday. So that'll be cool. What's cool is, like, if you want to watch sort of the commentary version, then you can watch Red Wolf Vion. If you are committed to just watching how well or how poorly, in some people's cases, the influencer of your choice is playing, then you can follow on their stream, because I think most people are going to be streaming on their own channels as well as broadcasting to Vion's channel. So, I mean, it's just, it's such a cool event to be a part of, and I'm really excited for it. I've got some special stuff in store for you guys. So,
yeah, I like doing stuff like this, because, again, I think it kind of pushes more of the fan side of a Gundam celebration. Because I think I was talking yesterday on your show, there's the Star Wars celebration that's put on by Disney, or Lucasfilm, but there's not really Bandai does go to events and then have like a Gundam pop-up base, but something that more celebrates the Gundam lore, everything. Yeah, that's right. It is soon. So yeah,
it's soon.
Everyone that's watching, follow everyone on Twitter for that. That'll be a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Okay. A couple things to show off. So I had that video that went up yesterday of the, you know, thanks to Xionic Shadow Sieg New York. It's of that, Rising Freedom. And, you know, I got to say, for a guy that complains a lot about, things about outside UC, this is a really cool Gunpla. I almost feel like this is better representative of, I think, the more general Gunpla sort of culture. You know, it's got all the kind of craziness going on here.
Yeah, the accoutrement.
Yeah, and when I was talking about the articulation, they do some interesting things to make it more like, to allow it to give it the superhero poses, which Seed is known for. And I think that's kind of where, that's a cross-section of Gundam popularity.
Yeah, I think it's very telling that if you were to plug into AI, like image generators, like DALL-E or whatever, if you just ask for an image of a Gundam, typically you get like a Seed-looking Gundam. Yeah. And as much as I'm a UC elitist, even I gotta admit,
yeah, it's there's a lot about it where it's almost like, wow, there's a lot of things going on with this, and I talked about it in the video with this Gunpla. That's the type of engineering I'd like to see, done with others. Although I'm starting to appreciate that sort of surprise when you buy like a model kit, either a non-mainstream one, a mainstream one, a P-Bandai, where sometimes the engineering is completely different, and it kind of it makes it a little fun.
I think I mentioned that on the 1/400th scale Queen Mansa kit, which, it's like, come on, please give me a high grade Queen Mansa, like, or Queen Mantha, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. Point is, the 1/400th scale kit has like a very weird way of assembling the arms where it's like you're assembling them sideways. And I didn't get it at first. I was this part comes together here. And it was just completely different from any other high grade I've built. So
that's always interesting. It was like that with the Nightingale, which it really had a lot of just full parts. And I'm like, giant parts bigger than most Gunpla. It's like, okay, all right. So I actually also have the Justice. I forget if it has a specific, where did I put the box? But I'm going to be building that one as well. And I'm actually even more excited to build that since I was pretty impressed with this Rising Freedom.
I'm a huge fan of the Justice Gundam. Like,
oh, you are? Okay.
Yeah. As far as like Seed designs go, like, I love the Infinite Justice. What this one's, is it the Immortal Justice? I think
that,
is the.
That sounds right. Where did I put the box? Oh, right here.
But hey, I'm an Athrun fan. Yep. So like,
Oh, okay. Yeah. Athrun's real popular. Yeah. We did that Seed kind of like history dive with some of the supporters, and Ashley, our social media admin, that's her favorite character too. And yeah, there's compelling reasons for it. Yeah. I tell you, like, it's funny. First glance of these kits, I'm like, but then building it, it's like, okay, this is impressive. I'm actually really excited to, Oh, and there's something else. So in my video, there's a part where I'm talking about the mobile armor mode of this. And as I'm talking about my transformation, I untransform it in like 3 seconds, which I'm pretty impressed of. I like the idea that the way the engineering is, even though it's not too much to it, you can like transform and untransform it really quick.
Yeah, there are some mobile suits that the transformations just don't really work. I don't know. It's
you have to schedule the night. It's like, honey, from 7 to 9 tonight, I'm gonna try transforming this robot if you can just leave me alone.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It I mean, you get that from Gundam wing suits as well, right? Like the Wing Zero and the Epion, they're very quick, easy transformations. The Epion just like folds its legs back and the wing just kind of turns around. But yeah, I mean, it's very sad to me that there's a lot of transformables that just don't work out of the box.
And I think that's why I think stuff like Seed is kind of that pinnacle of Gunpla, because they got to the point, okay, let's engineer this all crazy superhero-like, but let's also make it where the transforming is easy. I think that works, you know?
It does, yeah. I think
that works. It's really cool. Okay, another thing I just picked up. Let's see. Hold on. The Justice's third antenna is huge. It's my only gripe about it. Okay, that'll be interesting to check out.
Oh, I see Matt Wheaton in the chat saying, I'm starting to become a Kira Yamato appreciator. Why?
Yeah, can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I'd like some background on that, because like I love Shin, I love Athrun. Yes.
Oh, I love Shin. Shin is what really made me go, oh, this is a cool series when, you know, a Destiny came out. But
yeah,
Kira, the thing with Kira, and on one hand, I can't knock it for this. Let me know what you think about this. Kira is almost like a blank character that a younger person. Oh, not younger. I don't want to say that, but someone could put themselves in, you know, like how Master Chief is sort of this.
Exactly.
You don't see him, but Kira, he has emotions, but it's very like baseline. Like, yeah, I am curious about my friendship with this person or that, you know?
I mean, it's the same thing that you get with Mikazuki from IBO. It's the same thing that you get with Hiro from Wing. It's the same thing that you get with Link from Legend of Zelda.
That's a good call. Yeah.
You know, you get these sort of blank slate characters. And I think that, you know, Lego did a study on this like way back when they were trying to analyze the ways that boys and girls play with toys. And there was, I think their conclusions, and I'm paraphrasing here, they determined that boys wanted a character that they can look up to, that they can be. Whereas girls preferred to have sort of that blank slate character that they can project themselves onto, which is why you have like Barbie, who does everything, right? Like Barbie's a doctor, she's a vet, she's a teacher, she's everything. Whereas, you know, boys typically like He-Man. Like, I don't want to be teacher He-Man. I want to be He-Man.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I feel like maybe I need to take that in account when I'm watching things. Like, and sometimes it's not deliberate, but like, when I'm watching a character that I'm having trouble connecting with, I might think, okay, is this where I'm supposed to try to be in that person's shoes? Or am I supposed to like look up to them? You know, like I think there's other ways. Like Ash is someone I look up to, because there's this guy that's scared out of his, you know, Ash, not the Pokemon guy, sorry guys, from Evil Dead and Army Darkness. I like how he's like this scared wuss because the evil is coming after him, and then he just can't take it anymore. He's like, ah, fuck this. And then he just has that sarcastic attitude as he's just trying to get past the evil. I like that, because it's like, wow, that's an interesting character right there.
Yeah.
I want to be just like him.
If Ash were like a D&D character, he would be like high in charisma, high in strength, but like low intelligence and like low dexterity. You know, he
would. Yep. And he would have some sort of, and I don't know what stat this would be for, but how he talks to people, where like he could have you know, the one-liners can kind of be some sort of buff.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it reminded me, like, there's this the Terminator game that came out. I want to say it was 360 era, right at the end of the 360 era. It was a really good Terminator game where you were Arnold. And it was like a different story, and you were running around as a Terminator, but it had a one-liner button. And I want to say it was Y. So anytime you wanted like a Arnold Schwarzenegger one-liner as you're playing, which is neat because that's not like a necessary gameplay element, but it's something you can functionally do in the game to make you feel like you're part of the universe. I find that to be interesting. Honestly, it's the same thing as the chat in GBO2 because you can only select certain things. So, and it's like, okay, this could be a gameplay element or not necessarily. It could be just a way to communicate, but specific things.
Yeah, it's weird because every time I play GBO2, at the end of every match that I lose, I get a lot of like good work, good work, good work, good work in the in the chat button, and I'm like, wait a second,
it's like
not good work.
It's like thanks for being nice, but yeah. Johnny Tacoma saying, I can't seem to like Shin. I've tried, LOL. This is what you do: pretend Shin is if the Aeyug kind of formed a bigger military and became a bigger force, and Camille was like this enlisted part of that, you know, like a more formalized military. I feel like Shin is that sort of thing.
And I think it's one of those things where you have to clarify, like, because Gundam, and I was having this conversation with Alter/No One on YouTube. You guys know him. You love him. Alter's great.
George Costanza.
But what's that?
George Costanza. If you haven't, ask him to do a George Costanza.
He does a fantastic Jason Alexander.
Oh, yeah.
So we were having a conversation earlier today on Twitter about, you know, just Gundam in general and Tomino style storytelling. And one of the things you have to remember is like, you're not supposed to necessarily like every character, but that doesn't mean that they're bad characters. Anival Gato is not necessarily a character you're supposed to like, but he is a well-written character. Yeah. Rekawa, Shin is another example.
I would say Quest is, it's almost like almost written to not like her. Like, yeah, we want to give that in, which I love. I love the idea of doing something in a story that you'd be like, what? But the audience saying what is on behalf of the world and the characters. And what does that mean? And I think if you're not invested, it's easy to be like, oh, that's annoying. And I think I was like that at first in Shar's Counterattack. Sometimes, you know, talk down to Shar's Counterattack. But I think Quest was a big part of that. It kind of took me a while to realize the intention was to have a character written that you didn't like. And it kind of propelled these characters in these situations.
Yeah. And I mean, credit to George R.R. Martin, because he's done that really well with characters like Joffrey and Ramsay, that like in Game of Thrones, those are characters that like they're despicable people. You're not supposed to like them, but man, are they portrayed fantastically. And, you know, for better or worse, we can probably all identify someone like that in our lives, that if they had that kind of power, they would be that type of evil, malevolent bastard. And it's the same thing with Tomino Gundam characters, is it's like, they're all human beings. There's no good guys or bad guys. It's like, there's human beings that are constantly kind of at war with their own emotions. It's just what makes this franchise so beautiful.
Yeah, no, it does. I love, because you can love the characters that are supposed to be the antagonist, but you're not looking at him as a bad guy. You can look at them. Oh, that's really the antagonist, but great character. It's great. Let's see. King Dillon, Shin does have that bloodlust though. Yeah. And that's the thing. I feel like what happened to Camille, it was that injustice bug I talk about when you see injustice and then you get, you're a nice person, but then like your friends are effed with, and then you get so angry, you know?
Yeah, and I think that Camille had the benefit of being before, like, political correctness. And I know, Adam, you disagree with me about, like, Camille being portrayed as a neurodivergent character, but I feel like Camille is a character that clearly doesn't think the same way as everyone else does. I think that in the you know, 2010s when... I think it was, 2007 when Gundam Seed Destiny came out. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I don't remember.
It was somewhere around there. Yeah. But yeah, Shin didn't have that as like a crutch to fall back on. So like Shin came off more sociopathic than Camille did, because it was like, oh, you know, Camille has this, you know, mental condition that he's working through, whereas Shin is just a crazy person.
Yeah, and you know, that's a good point, because I don't know, we might have to, man, my cat is trying to get my attention. We might have to revisit this concept again, because I don't even know exactly where I stand, because yeah, the him having autism, but it's like, is that an excuse for the story just within the world, but it's not really the excuse of the writer, just because yeah. I feel like in life we come across people where we have trouble navigating the world. I would even think more in the future, like we see now, there's more people that say, yeah, I am neurodivergent. Yeah. But no, it's because society has caused these, like all these like narrow passages you have to make your way through that don't seem to make sense. So that's almost like Gundam's ahead of its time portraying someone like Camille the way they are. Yeah. Cause it's, I find that very interesting.
Yeah. Let's pencil this in. I want to do like a Camille and Shin like deep dive with you, where we can let's do a full edited video where we compare all of Camille and Shin's kind of idiosyncrasies and things, and we can get real deep into it.
I think that would be cool to do, because after that, the one thing that I really like when I think about Seed Destiny is all the Zeta like references. It's pretty much like a Zeta, but then I would like to also distill Zeta down to be like, what show, what series has ever had a sequel where the world was flipped on its head, but still calling out reality? Like, who are the bad guys? Who are the good? Like, for that to be the sequel of Gundam is amazing. How often do stories do that? You know, like, what if George Lucas made Empire Strikes Back more where the rebels seem like terrorists?
Yeah, you that would have been crazy.
Yeah. And that's what I think Star Wars is missing, although I think we've had that conversation a lot.
We're going to keep having it until someone listens to us.
Oh, yeah. And then Talos bringing up the story with Shin's story at the beginning, I guess, which, again, that would be something similar with Camille, the tragedy they had to go through when it came to family. So
definitely.
All right. And then another thing I grabbed this week, and I'm going to do a full video on it, and it's this Cold Districts type GM. Now,
my favorite GM.
Okay. I hear that a lot. And it might not seem like much because it's just a GM, but when I started messing around with its articulation, I realized it's doing amazing things, like with the arm articulation. It's not a typical joint. It's actually the armor itself. Well, I'm not showing it bends in on itself. I know that's hard to, I'm not good with this, but anyway, the armor is the joint. So when you're moving it, it's like bending into itself instead of just a joint there.
It's kind of like a real grade in that regard, where some of the real grade kits have that kind of folding in on themselves. I also noticed this on, of course, hey, dad mode here. My daughter has some of those like little Bluey toys. And one of the things I've noticed about the Bluey toys is the way that they designed the sort of hinge where they sit down. And I'll have to show this on stream sometime.
Yeah.
They have like, you know, belly fur, right? So it's like Bluey, the dog, is mostly blue. And then she has like white belly fur. And the hip joint where her legs come up is actually part of the stomach. And so the stomach fur kind of folds into itself. And so it's like this seamless transition. And you know, we were talking about this yesterday, like the articulation of action figures. Sometimes they do a very good job of hiding where the bends are happening and where the articulation is. And I have to say that the Bluey toys, absolutely incredible. Bandai, take note.
No, that tells you they're being designed for an adult collector. Right?
Right. I'm gonna replace all of this stuff with Bluey and Bandit and
I mean, is a kid gonna go to the parent and be, mommy, I can see the articulation. I can see the you know, it's made for an adult, I'm pretty sure.
It's gotta be. Yeah.
That's neat though. I love that stuff. And I wanna call out Talos Mobius here saying we need to start calling the Cold Districts GM its actual name, the GM Type D. Thank you. I need to remember that. I like, but it's that interesting thing where 0080, right? Introduced some, and that's it. Introduced the G like modernized versions of everything, but then later went back and said, oh no, these are different types. So right. That's where that comes from, which I find very interesting.
Yeah, I wish that they would give more accurate names to like some of the Thunderbolt mobile suits, right? Because right now everything is just brackets TB.
Oh, that's right.
But like, right. You know, we can all agree that like the Thunderbolt Akai is not the same Akai as the 0079 Akai.
That's interesting because the bracket is delineating a out of world, sort of like outside of universe name, you know, and I think yeah. They need to. So what it could be is where it's, either they give them like a Kai designation or something, or maybe they're able to. Yeah, because it is interesting if you think about how they have to compare or show those off in GBO2. They have to say TB at the end, even if there's only minor differences, which, oh well, it's another way to go about it, I guess. Oh, the Type D was capable of going to the desert equally to the northern region. So, yeah, even though this says cold district type, that could be, I guess, the color scheme of it, really, in its GM type.
It's D. So hard sometimes to kind of delineate where the truth is when it comes to sort of these, like, distinctions of mobile suit history. We had this conversation a couple of weeks ago on my stream with regard to the Zeta Gundam. Like, I hate...
Oh, that's right.
I absolutely hate the modern version of like the Project Z or Project Zeta, where it's like, really, oh no, Anaheim was already making a Zeta Gundam. Camille had nothing to do with it. And it's like, that is an absolute retcon, because if you watch the anime, literally Camille sitting there on the computer, like sipping his soda, I'm thinking of calling it the Zeta Gundam. And Astonage is like, that's cool. Let's do it. Like,
so, hashtag Camille builds first.
Camille built first. There we go.
I don't know.
So, I of course, like, you get so many of these bits of lore from random places. I mean, like, the Perfect Grade Zeta instruction manual of all places has like lore on the Zeta Gundam development tree. And it's like, you know, who has access to this? So don't believe the Gundam Wiki, you guys. Like, always.
Yeah, check out. Yeah, and I think I forget the title of the video. It was a few weeks ago. It was a live stream, and I think Zeta is the thumbnail. So if you guys want to check that out, because we look through that book, and it has some interesting lore that kind of expands. Yeah, like you said, like, it almost retcons, but could expand it.
We need to come up with a term that, like, addresses when people make a retcon work. So it's like,
you're saying when there's a retcon that's done, but it actually works and doesn't actually change anything.
Yeah. Like a retcon to the retcon, like a correct con.
Dude, I like correct that. Con. Correct con.
Okay. There we go.
I was sitting there like, I'm going to come up with this, but you did. That was good.
Man, we're on it.
Yeah. And Talos has told me this too, but yeah, the Gundam Wiki has information issues, which it's something I have learned over time, like more than I thought, which again, that's no one's fault. Like, it's not like there's one person that's in charge of making sure everything's accurate, but the more I go through it for research, even working with Talos on those videos he helps me do of the mobile suits, he's actually sourcing information other places, because a lot of times the wiki will be incorrect. So it's interesting. So, another thing that was interesting, correct con. Yeah. Here's something that's really, really cool. And this is kind of video game related, and I don't know, I'm not trying to speak too long onto it, but you know, back when I sold my entire video game collection, my whole thought process was, these games are available online through emulators, ROMs. And I know on one hand, people are like, oh, that's illegal. But on the other hand, it's like, there's really no way to access some of the stuff. It's considered abandonware. Even if you look at the latest thing where Nintendo sued Yuzu, it was because they were charging for something specific. It was their highest Patreon tier was, they will offer support for Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. And this is back before it came out, because it got leaked. So it's interesting that, I guess it's almost like, I don't think Nintendo necessarily did anything bad. I think they were almost kind of protecting in a way, because that was that gray area crossed over more into the black, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and we talk about this a lot because my opinion has personally changed when it comes to emulation and things like that is, you know, once something becomes Abandonware, it's a question of preservation and archiving, right?
Yeah.
But when you're going to take software that is currently available on current hardware that is easily available to people, you know, maybe they don't want to pay for a Nintendo Switch, but like that's not an excuse to do something. And so I think people get really heated about these types of topics. And, you know, I'm sure that even now people are like, oh, my God, here comes Steven shilling for Nintendo. But, you know, we need to have kind of clear rules about what's acceptable and what's not. And I think that too many people are all or nothing. Right. It's like either all of it's OK or none of it's OK. And it's like, no, we need to have the conversation about like, you know, yes, I think that preservation is important. I think that we've talked about some fan communities that are trying to get Gun Evo back up and running on their own servers.
Exactly.
And it's like, if Bandai doesn't want anything to do with Gun Evo anymore, then that's fair game. They can do what they want. And anyone who's, you know, trying to make that not happen, anybody who's like saying like, oh, these guys are breaking the law by stealing all this software. It's like, no one's buying the software anymore anyway, because it's not supported.
Again, they'd have to prove that people are making money off of them somehow, like Nintendo did with Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I think that, and unfortunately, a lot of the public is misinformed on some of these things. Shocker, you know, like we can't even get the Gundam Wiki to be correct on some of these things, but it's like.
Yeah. And it's in the library, the House of Congress, one of the articles in there specifically states about Abandonware and, you know, so, and what I was getting at was
sorry, I didn't mean to go off on a tangent.
No, I'm glad we talked about this because I feel like I have to talk through this too. Like I have emulated Switch and Switch games, but I've also bought them. Another example I was going to talk about here is, so I own the Castlevania Advanced Collection because I love Castlevania and the Game Boy Advance games are great. And recently I played through and beat two of the DS games, but those aren't available anywhere. So I had to emulate them.
Yeah.
But then another thing I did was, even though I own the Game Boy Advance Castlevania games, I decided to play them through my emulator. So what it is my brother-in-law, a while back helped me set this up. He like built me a RetroPie with all emulators and games on it.
Awesome.
I've been able to take that and like copy it. So I made a copy on my ROG Ally. And then I found this program called, it's called Sync Thing. One word, Sync Thing. And I think I talked to you about this a little bit. Basically, what I can do is with Sync Thing, the UI is in the browser and I'm selecting my emulator folder that has all the emulators, the ROMs, everything. And I have it syncing between my computer and my ROG Ally. So any emulator or ROM I play, it's going to save that like state. So if I go on my other device, I can resume my emulators. It also has there's this website called Retro Achievements. And it's really awesome where all old school games people went through and added achievements. So
that's sweet.
And I'm the type, I like achievements for games I really like because it gives me that extra thing, the challenge, you know, to have fun with. So, and because I've already beaten these games, I like that added achievement. So I can track achievements, multiple devices. If I download a ROM or an emulator somewhere, I have it in the folder that it will then sync across. So then I can have it to where my entire emulation library is synced on any device I would want to access it, which I think is awesome. I'm That's using the front sweet. End called RetroBat. It uses like the emulation station back end, retro. It's so many layers. There's RetroArch, emulation station, and RetroBat. And I got to say, I love this concept because, you know, it's the idea of being able to take my games anywhere. Because like that's what's nice about the Switch. Is the fact that, you know, you can pick it up, handheld, dock it, but the Switch is underpowered. And I almost feel like that's unfair, you know, because that's kind of what, you know, Nintendo's aim was, even though I'm playing a bunch of games that are old anyway, that don't require their power.
Yeah. Well, you know, and so that brings up like, you know, there's a YouTube creator, Zach Builds. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but you know, he's a lot of I mean, I love his content. Obviously, he does a lot of emulation and like hardware restoration. And so he's like built upscaled N64s and PS2s. Oh, and he actually even made like a Switch Pro. And so it's one of those things where it's like, you know, okay, so then where does that fall legally, morally to people? Because, you know, he took a Switch, took it apart, you know, overclocked the GPU, whatever. I don't understand the hardware lingo.
It's actually an underclocked
They actually specifically drill it down. So he actually replaced the back end of it with like an aluminum frame so that it would be a little bit more heat resistant. And yeah, check out that video if you haven't.
I think you'd really like it. Check it out. In fact,
Zach Builds is really good about taking like, you know, video game hardware and upscaling it. And shocker, you know, he loads them up with ROMs, and it's like, well, where did the ROMs come from, Zach? I'm not saying this to like throw him under the bus. I think that everything he does is above board.
Yeah.
And I think that we need to respect that, like things like texture upscaling, you know, there are people that play like high definition versions of Ocarina of Time that actually run smoother than the Switch emulator.
Yeah. That's true. And the other part of it, which became a big deal to me recently, has to do, you know, I've been buying like game controllers. Here's a Switch controller. You can even see the back, like how much it has the grip.
It's got a little beefiness to it.
Yeah, a lot of beefiness. It even has mechanical clicks. I don't know if you guys can hear that on there. The whole thing is mechanical. And so what happened was I was playing this, and my wife, I guess, assumed it was the ROG Ally. You know, because my wife's not going to know, and it's white. And I was like, no, this is the Switch with new controllers. And it made me think, you know what? If I had the chance to, or it was possible, I would swap this out and put it on the ROG Ally, because I did a lot of research before I bought this. This was actually from China, this controller here. It is one of the best controllers, and it's like, I like that I can then get my custom, you know, I can get a really high-end, nice controller that works really well, because that's the new thing nowadays. But to be able to then choose what controller you're using with a portable, because it's one thing to get a portable that has kind of the power, the features you need, but does a controller work? Luckily, the ROG Ally controller is good, but I think nowadays there's more pro controllers that could be used, especially this thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I actually have a frame that I have on my PS Vita that it actually has like R2 and L2 triggers, and it taps the back of the screen where
we must have got the same one. Do you still have yours and everything?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, we must have had the same one, because I bought that same thing for my Vita, because it's, I tell you, it's weird. And it was like that with the Switch. For me, it's impossible to play games the way I want with a small grip. I need a bigger grip. And this, because I've been playing, you know, that Link's Awakening remake, and having this, it's so much more comfortable to sit back and
play. How far have you gotten in that, by the way?
I'm actually lost. So you remember I was telling you I got to the guy where you can build your own dungeon?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then after that, I'm traveling around, and it's like, I don't know where to go, and I kind of don't want to look it up, you know, like, because it really makes me feel like when I was playing it on the Game Boy, and I felt like I was just wandering around all the time, and it feels great. I'm surprised I don't remember. There were some little things I remembered, and I couldn't get there yet, and I'm like, okay, what do I get again? Because, the last time I played it, was the Game Boy Color re-release. I originally played it back on the Game Boy, and that was, my first Zelda game. And that was like, oh my God, what is this game? that, and then A Link to the Past, like at the time playing that stuff, it's like amazing.
Those are very like, and I think that we're slowly getting back to that sense of exploration. You talk about it a lot in terms of like what Gundam games are missing. Like Gundam games are missing that sense of free form exploration
in that world, like really being like you're in that world. That's interesting stuff. I can't wait to see. But anyway, the point with that though is I think it's really cool. There's a way you can sync your ROMs, your emulators, your saves, because if you don't have your Sega Genesis cartridges anymore, you might not have your saves, but this is kind of a way that you can like almost maintain a library of not only games, but like saved games. Like, oh, I wish I had all my old Castlevania saves because I would go back and revisit the world I've already beat with all the stuff so I can get all the other things or, you know, do whatever.
Yeah, definitely. I remember this was years ago when the Xbox 360 came out, there was a memory card attachment because like obviously the Xbox, you couldn't transfer memory from an Xbox memory card to an Xbox 360. So I actually bought this like dongle that plugs into the Xbox that has a USB, like just a thumb drive, so that you could copy your saves from the Xbox and port them over to the Xbox 360 so that you could play, which, I mean, it's so amazing when you think about like, wow, I had to have a specialized piece of hardware to do this, you know, 15 years ago.
I still have that.
Now there's just cloud services that you can like.
Yeah, exactly. Everything is cloud, which seems good, but then we're starting to realize that's bad because it's like that. That's why, like, I have a hard drive of just my Gundam Blu-rays. You know, it's like,
yeah.
Okay. So we're getting near the end of the show. What I wanted to look at real quick was that poll.
In
the chat. So, like, which are you more excited for, Hathaway 2 or Requiem for Vengeance? And Hathaway 2 won with 67%.
A pretty commanding lead.
I think that makes sense. Like, I feel like this is because I want to say Requiem for Vengeance, but it's really Hathaway 2. Requiem for Vengeance because it's new, Unreal Engine 5, more of a Western approach to the storytelling. But Hathaway 2 is a sequel to like Hathaway being like, in my opinion, when it comes to an anime, that's like a high-end, well-done anime. Coming from a Westerner, you know. And then what about you? Would you pick that too?
So I actually picked Requiem for Vengeance, again, for the reasons that you mentioned. Like, I love the novel approach to it. I love that it's set during the 1 year war. But, you know, I can empathize with the choice to be more excited for Hathaway 2 because, I mean, say what you will about him as a character, or if you don't like the story from the manga or whatever, it's like the movie Hathaway, like on Netflix, was fantastic.
It was
a beautifully animated, and you know, we've talked about it in the past, but like some of the minor details and stuff like that that were included in it, I think are very reminiscent of like 0079 Gundam,
led
world building.
You would feel like that wouldn't be there anymore. It's really neat how Sunrise and Bandai is like, we need to hold on to that essence. So that's it for today's episode. That was a good time. Thanks for everyone in the chat. Thanks for everyone that voted on the poll. And you know, just to remind everyone again, next week starts that Gundam Springtide celebration on Steven's channel. Link to Midnight Hatter in the description below so you can join.
I'm excited about it. I think we're gonna have some fun.
Oh yeah, we are. So until next week, everyone, thanks for watching, and we'll talk later.